I found out something very unsettling about Harry.
He gambles.
What do you mean he gambles?
He plays craps in the back room of a private club. I mean, you know, you're 11, come on, little Joe. Snake eyes, hard way eight.
That's how it goes. He loses a lot of money. You had no idea?
No, I didn't.
Welcome to the Crap Vegas Podcast.
Vegas, here we come.
Vegas!
Here are your hosts, Chris and Josh.
Hello and welcome to episode number 21 of the Crap Vegas Podcast. I am Chris, he's Josh, and Josh, we did it, we made it. We are going to Vegas this weekend when people listen to this episode.
We will be in Vegas when people listen to this episode.
Yeah, true, that's true. That's true too.
I thought you were going to say we're legal now, we're 21. I thought you were going there.
Yes, you are big on associating our episode numbers with dice rolls, events in life. I think we had a quinceañera at one point. That's right. It was all sorts of things happening.
No, you were going, yes, we will be WIC. And when you hear this, if you listen live, we will be in Vegas. We will have had a great roll, as I always say, the night before.
Boy, we have really screwed ourselves on that luck in the past, by the way. Every time we do one of these episodes right before we're about to be in Vegas and it comes out while we're there, we just got our ass handed to us. I don't know if we're bad luck for ourselves or what.
I know. And we talk about doing this live sometimes from Vegas, and then we're like, no, that would just take too much time away from the tables. And, you know,
I think it was like, what was it, like episode 4 or 5, we said we were going to do live equipment from Vegas. We brought the equipment with us. Michael Traeger was going to be a guest.
That was my birthday.
He was going to come join us for you. Yeah, that's, we had a whole idea planned out. And then at the end of the day, we just could not pry ourselves away from the table for an hour to actually sit down and record it.
Well, and part of it's because when we record for an hour, it actually is about 2 hours, or, you know, it's not a lot just an hour either, right? Chris has to edit out all my swearing.
I have to cut 75% of the stuff that we talk about. So, okay. Well, people, if you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us via email at podcast@crapvegas.com. You can reach us on our forums. That's crapvegas.com/boards. Or you can always reach us on Twitter. He's @VegasDuffy. I'm @SmallWhale13. Or the show page is @CrapVegas. Feedback on previous episodes. Josh, we got a lot of people commenting about our discussion of split bank accounts, which was really it was a throwaway topic from the last episode, just answering a question. And that's what I was going to say. More response than anything.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Half the time, you know, when we set up our episodes, we sometimes have a theme or something that we think is going to be the main topic of the show, and or that will generate the most interest, or, you know, that kind of thing. And that was not the one we picked that we thought was going to.
No, we thought it was on the bottom of our list of stuff. That usually means it gets skipped and pushed to the next episode because we don't have time. But somehow that became a very interesting topic for a lot of people. Anything you want to add to the discussion, Josh?
Well, it was interesting. I think it was Mississippi Rob was one of the people on Twitter that brought it up. And a few people brought up the idea that couples that have been together longer might be more likely to have their, or not been together longer, but got together younger, I should say.
Yes.
Might be more likely to have their finances tied together than people that got together when they were a little older and maybe were already a little more established financially and that kind of thing. And, you know, that stems from our discussion about having separate gambling accounts and, you know, that kind of thing. And I thought that was interesting. I hadn't thought of that before. I think that's very likely to be, you know, a contributing factor. What do you think?
No, I agree with that. I think, you know, if people get married at a young age or combine, you know, at that point, they need both finances to make life work in general. So, you know, those accounts typically get combined at that point. But if you meet in your late 20s, early 30s, you have, you know, a savings account that has some money in it, you're not struggling check to check or anything like that, I would think that you are more likely to keep your finances separate. And if it's later than that in life, I can't imagine too many people getting married or remarried, and just, you know, completely, in their 40s or 50s. I wouldn't think anybody would be combining their finances at that point. So you are right. I think part of it's just, you know, part of age of when the couple came together. And I think it also comes down to usually how much money we're talking about here. Because the more money you have, the less likely you are to share it and just keep your account separate. I mean, for just pure logistical purposes, if, you know, 40% of relationships end in divorce, it's a hell of a lot easier if the accounts are separated from the beginning than if you have to break that apart at the end. Well, I was going through one, I can contest that. Yeah. And yeah, it definitely makes things life easier. But yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting topic and I love hearing the feedback that we got on it.
Me too. I was going to say the more disposable income you have, you know, I think the more likely having, or the more it makes sense from a gambling perspective to have separate accounts too. The more, you know, I mean, if your gambling budget is only $200 for a trip or something like that, having a separate gambling account, you know,
it might not make
probably
sense.
Not necessary. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's a little bigger, it might make sense to keep it separate.
Yeah. Fair enough. But yeah, thank you everybody for the feedback on that topic. It was a lot of fun to talk about and think about. And it's interesting, you know, people that you think you know and how they might react to things, they might be on the opposite spectrum of this or, you know, vice versa. So I really enjoyed the discussion.
So did I.
Next topic, Josh, feedback on a previous episode. We got a DM from Vegas Vice on Twitter. He said he listens to the podcast, but he still has a hard time understanding when it's better to buy the 5 and 9 versus place the 5 and 9. Does this only apply to crapless? If it's a $25 table, is it better to buy than place? Huh? So he has some confusion over placing versus buying on the 5 and 9. The general answer to this, and I responded back to him pretty quickly, is it's almost always better to buy than it is to place. As long as on the buy, you pay the VIG on the win only. That significantly changes this discussion. But assuming that the buy has VIG only, you know, VIG only on wins, even on a $20 bet, which is usually the lowest a casino will accept for a buy bet, a $20 buy on a 5 or 9 pays 29 after VIG, and a $20 place bet pays 28. You get a buck extra. And that just extrapolates throughout the whole thing. A $100 bet is going to pay $5 more, and a $200 bet is going to pay $10 more. So for every 20 bucks, you're going to pick up a buck. So yeah, absolutely. If you can do it, it's the best thing to do.
Yep. And it doesn't have anything to do with it being crapless or regular. Either you're going to buy the 5 or 9 or you're not. It doesn't matter if it's a crapless table or a standard table. If you can do it, do it. If you can't, then you can.
Good question. And Josh, I'm curious if you can buy the 5 and 9 on a crapless table. I haven't seen that yet. I'm sure the answer is yes. I would think
if it's available on a regular, it would probably be available on a crapless.
I think so. So that would be interesting to see. Maybe one of the MGM properties that are pushing more
towards
5 and 9 buys. Somebody can comment on if they've seen buy bets on 5 and 9 at one of their properties on a crapless. So I was just curious. That's something that popped in my mind. If you have some feedback, share it with us. So thanks, Vegas Vice, for that question. Hopefully that answers it for you. Josh, you said you wanted to start talking about a different crap strategy every once in a while. And we happened to get a message on Twitter from Victoria, that's @Fuchsia_goddess, who brought up the idea of the triple lux system. And I must say, off the top of my head, I have no idea what that is. And there are no notes on the page. This makes for a terrific discussion.
But you did Google it really quickly. Tell everybody what you saw when you Googled it.
Yeah, so Josh mentioned this right before we were about to hop on here. And the main Google headline is, let me get up to it, Josh. It's at the very top of the page here. It says...
I think I did the same thing.
Yeah, it says, the Triple Lux crap system has been known to produce a profit of $24,000 when used properly.
There we go.
So Josh, explain to me, how do I use this thing properly so I can make 24 grand?
So our listener, Victoria, brought this up that she was excited to try this system that she, I don't know if it's called a system or a strategy, whatever. That
it's called a system, according to the website.
I don't know if there's a difference.
If it's a system, that's good because strategies, they don't work, but systems do work.
Okay, so I'm not going to go too far into it because I don't know all the... I had to look it up too and research it too. I don't know all that much, but I was curious. I thought this might be a fun thing to talk about. So, Chris, basically, it's placing all the numbers, including the point if you are so inclined. It's really a bankroll system rather than a strategy of how to bet system. It's bankroll management or bankroll... I don't know if you want to say management. But so you're going to place all the numbers, including the point, or decrease from outside inwards if you have a smaller bankroll. Does that make sense so far?
Okay. Yeah, I'm following you so far.
It doesn't matter what numbers you place in theory. The idea is the whole triple thing is you're going to power press twice and then collect. So let's say you place all the numbers. Then you, and you know, let's say we play 270 across. So we've got a $60 8. We would do a full press plus whatever it took to get to the next unit up, I think. And then you do that again. So two power presses, then collect.
So is this the same sort of thing as what we talked about on the last episode, where you're taking your earnings off of like a, you know, a four or five and putting them on the six?
No, you're pressing the number that hits.
Oh, okay. So this, yeah, you're not just arbitrarily choosing one. You're doing two presses on the same number.
Right. And they're power presses. They're not even, you know, they're full.
I'm seeing like a weightlifter pushing up his four, you know.
That's exactly right. So the idea is, I think the theory of it is, if you do that, if you power press twice, then you hit on that number, and collect. You don't take the number down, but you collect there. You don't press again on that third hit. You've then covered your initial buy-in for the most part. Obviously, if you get a lot of random numbers, so you're pressing, you know, all the numbers along the way, you're going to have more out there. But the idea is you will essentially or close to have covered your buy-in when you hit that third number, that third eight, for example.
Okay, so you're not collecting a penny until the third hit on a specific number.
Correct.
And this is a bankroll management system.
Well, management isn't quite the right word. It's a bankroll.
It's a bankroll destroyer system.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay. So I think we're on the same page here.
So the idea is then you collect on the third number and then you go, you press until you hit table max.
Oh yeah. Balls to the wall at that point. Why not?
So you cover your initial buy-in and then you press like crazy until you get to table max. I think that's the general idea.
And this sounds like a Chris strategy where I press things and never actually collect. And it looks really good from a rating perspective, but I make no money.
Well, this is all kind of what I was thinking as I was reading about this. And tell me anybody, if you know of this system and I've gotten things substantially wrong, give us a shout. But my understanding is, and I think that's the headline that Chris got to, is that, you know, how you get to $24,000, you're going to balls to the wall until you...
I mean, I'm just thinking about it, Josh. The average roll is what? Six rolls?
Six rolls, I think, yeah.
Like that? Yeah, I mean, we're not people that follow that sort of thing. But so if the average roll is six, seven rolls, the odds of collecting on average are absolutely terrible because the odds of rolling the same number back to back are already small. But getting it a third time before you get to the average number of rolls, I don't see a lot of money to be made here. And this really, I mean, if you want to destroy a bankroll, I mean, I thought we play through money pretty quickly if we're having a bad day.
Well, that's what I was going to say. This is the variance is huge, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because Chris and I, as we've talked about, Chris and I usually will collect one, two, three, you know, three hits before we begin to press. That's kind of our, you know, depending on how the table's going.
Like 60-70% of our, you know, place and buy bets back before we start really pushing it.
Right. And this throws that on its head. This is immediate power pressing before you're collecting anything. I mean, I agree with Chris. I agree with your point. The theory of it, I think the theory behind it is if you can get to that third number, you've paid off the roll. And when I say the third number, I don't mean the third roll. I mean the third time hitting the eight.
The third time you hit a specific number, yes.
Then, you know, you buy yourself another shooter. And the idea is get as many shooters to hopefully catch that hot roll.
I get you. But anytime you hear this where, you know, people are pressing like crazy, or especially like you said, after you collect, then really press like crazy, there's got to be some collection steps in here. If you're not pulling any money back in the rail, the press moves are worthless. I mean, you can press all you want, but if you don't collect anything, what are you doing? I mean, do you just wait till you hit table max and then you have to collect?
That's the idea, right?
And then, no, you don't collect then. You put a put bet out and then you put even more.
So, I mean, it was interesting because I had never heard of it either. I went to look it up. I'm like, that's a really aggressive strategy.
I mean, don't get me wrong. We've said many a times, there's no such thing as a winning strategy. The way Josh and I play is not a winning
way. However you want to play,
this is not a winning way. So from that perspective, we're all equal. This sounds very idiotic. I don't think you're going to have very much fun playing this way because unless you hit an amazingly lucky streak, then you're just not making any money. And quite frankly, this is almost like come betting from the perspective of having to have repeats for that.
Right.
And even, you know, come bettors can tell you, you know, how how crazy it can be from time to time, getting full odds up on something, waiting for it to hit again. And then your rolls go 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10 out.
Right.
And you know, with this, you could repeat every number twice and still not have anything. So
well, yeah. And that's really what I was getting at with this. Right. I was getting at with this being a betting system rather than an odds related system is kind of what I was trying to, you know, get to, which is, it's all well and good if you have, I guess, if you have a huge bankroll, you're not doing anything to decrease the odds or increase the odds. You know, the odds are what they are. And but you better have a huge bankroll to withstand this, at least in.
Like, I feel like we have a reasonable size bankroll for the levels that we play at.
Right.
Overall, this would destroy us. I mean, very quickly.
But we could win $24,000 on a, you know, 37 across or whatever it was. I wish it offered some more detail,
Josh, about like how much you need to be playing, what other changes you need to make. It just says you're going to win 24. And Josh, on the page, there's even a video from one of the YouTube channels that talked about this more, that like the caption on the front catchy image says $24,000. So,
oh, I know. I watched
the number.
So I think it's Jeremy on Color Up does a breakdown of it. He's not the one, I think, that put out the video that Chris is talking about, but he does a breakdown more in depth on what the triple lux system is or method is or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting because when we go back to the last episode, that build a tower, in my opinion, that's a much better way to go. If you're gonna play a pressing strategy and you don't want to do what Chris and I have done, although I might do more towards the tower idea this coming trip.
I think it'd be fun to try. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're not going to just press the number that hits and you don't want to do the triple lux, then putting your winnings toward, you know, those numbers that hit more frequently, the 6 and the 8, is not a bad idea.
No, I agree with that. If we're talking about like ranking of potential of strategies, the one from last week, building the tower, is that what it was?
That would be much higher
on the list than the triple lux system. And you know, here's my thing, Josh. It's great that there's a million systems out there. I mean, a lot of people know things like the Iron Cross and stuff that are more standard systems. And like I said, you're not going to make any more money playing these systems. Sometimes there are systems that will help, you know, mitigate some of your losses and keep them
more
marginal.
That's what I was going to say, right.
This is definitely not one of those.
No.
The only problem that I have is when a lot of these YouTube channels especially put these systems out with, you know, flashy images to draw you in and talking about how much money you can earn doing it, and they don't mention that this isn't a winning strategy, there's nothing about this that makes it special, you're going to lose money. Yeah, I don't like when people get drawn in thinking, oh, this is like somebody figured it out. This is the way we have to play. When that is exactly not the case.
The person that the video that I saw compared it with basically kind of the way you and I play, place betting all the numbers across and doing more subtle pressing, that kind of thing. And the point that the person was making was this triple lux will get you more money when the number hits. Well, no kidding.
Oh, here, you want to be like, you can bet on that? Beep. Yes. I don't know how to put that sound effect in. If I could figure it out, I'd censor us, but I haven't figured that out yet.
It will also get you killed if, you know, because let's say you place all the numbers and then a 4, 5, 6 roll. So you press you power press the 4, 5, 6 according to this strategy, and then a 7 comes, which is entirely possible.
Yep, it is. And can not we just only have a rule on this show from now on, we never use the term power press anymore. I don't like that.
Fair enough.
Okay, good.
Even if you full press, whatever.
Yeah, full press.
I thought, and Victoria, I'm not trying to discourage you from going out there and doing this strategy. I want to hear how it goes. Hopefully you don't get killed.
Well, I'd much rather somebody else try it with their money than me. So, yeah, Victoria, let us know how it goes.
It just sounds dangerous to me.
It does. So good stuff. Let us know how that works out for you, Victoria. And if any other listener has done the triple lux crap system, let us know. Send us a message on Twitter or something. Okay. Next topic. Josh, we have like 80 more emails that we haven't got through question-wise, and we haven't traveled yet to our next trip. So I thought, let's do our best to knock out a handful of questions before we go. How's that sound?
So that sounds great. So this is a question that came in, what, September?
Good question.
we probably don't even know.
You know, you say that. Maybe I should start putting the dates associated with these things.
I've started doing that on the show notes. I don't know if you noticed that, but
Yeah, I know. And I don't copy it over, do I? So, oh, geez, that is a good idea. Good for you, Josh.
It was only you're to try and keep one. It, keep us a little more timely.
Yep. You are the smart one of the group. Okay. First question I have. We received an email a while back about dealer errors. And I think, Josh, it was specifically talking about something that he experienced at Encore Boston Harbor, which wouldn't surprise me at all because there's never any place I've ever been that's even remotely close to the errors they make at Encore Boston Harbor. So that's fitting.
We know it didn't happen at Wynn Vegas because they don't make errors.
They don't make errors. That's right.
No.
So he had two kind of questions that tie into each other. So when dealer errors happen, Josh, how do you handle them as a player?
Well, I think, and not to throw back to you can bet on that, but it depends on if the error is in our favor or not and how big it is and all that kind of stuff. And if the error is in my favor, I'm probably going to try and take it unless it's completely out of line. I know you sometimes try and be a little more, I guess it depends. Sometimes I would, sometimes I wouldn't.
I usually try, at blackjack tables, if they mispay, I almost always keep it.
Right.
At the craps table, ironically, I don't usually keep it. But here's what I have found that I do more often than not, Josh. If it's a small error, like if they forgot to like take my VIG or they overpaid me by like $4 on a bet or something.
Right.
Then I'd say, oh, no, you overpaid me, and I fix it, and I act like a really nice person.
But if it's a little and one, if it's a big error,
so if you have 300 nods on a four, and they give me 900 instead of 600, I just shut my mouth and take it. So yeah, I try to appear to be a very upstanding player, but at the end of the day, if you're going to make a huge error in my favor, then I'm going to pocket that money. If it's an error that's not in my favor, that they underpaid me, I speak up immediately.
Well, and actually, that's one of the things, Chris, I kind of depend on you for, because if you follow us enough, you know, and if you follow the show, you know,
Josh doesn't like numbers.
I'm not all that good with mathy. So
I used to think I was, but after doing this show, I don't think I am anymore.
Well, there is that. Yeah. But so oftentimes I honestly am not quite sure. I mean, I know what the low denominations that we get paid all the time, what I'm supposed to get. But as bets get pressed up, you know, if we're power pressing and we've got that tower built and all that stuff.
We had a rule, Josh.
I'm not sure what I'm supposed to get paid. So oftentimes I'll look at Chris and like, what am I supposed to get here? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. No, but I got
you. I'm the same way, Chris. Sometimes I'll take the chips. If I think it's wrong, I'll just hold them out in my hand for a minute with the idea that the dealer can kind of see what he or she has paid me and then correct it if it's wrong. And, you know, like if I see that I've got an extra green chip in there, for example, I'll just hold it out for a second, giving the dealer another minute to, you know, or a split second to see it. And then if they don't catch it, then it goes in my pocket or it goes in the rail.
Yeah. That's what I try to do as well. I try to, and I think this is a good lesson for all players, especially if you're playing with more money. I try to look on the felt or when it's in my hand before I bring it back to the rail to make sure that the payout is correct. Because once you rack it, it's really hard to go back and say, yes, oh, you underpaid me or overpaid me. But if you pick it up in your hand or look at it on the felt, or just eyeball it and it looks wrong, say, hey, hold on one second, I think this is wrong. And take a peek at it. And you might be wrong. You may have looked at it. You might not have seen a chip underneath. But the more you can do why it hasn't gone into the rack, it's much easier to correct. Yes. And I'll tell you an example of this, Josh. Recently, I was playing at my local casino. The dealers there are absolutely terrific. But we hit the all tall small and we made the all.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I had, I think, $15 on the all. And the $15 pays 174-1. That's not exactly the easiest math because you're saying, okay, 10 times is 1740. And what's half of 1740? You're like, oh, okay, that's 870. And then you're trying to add the two together and add back. I can easily understand how that can get messed up by a little bit. But when she pushed me the stack, she pushed me like $2,000 instead of $2,500. It was off by a purple chip, which is a significant mispayage.
That's a big deal, yeah.
If I would have picked that up and racked it, I don't think I ever would have seen that money again.
Right.
Unless those were the only purples in my rack so they could quickly say, oh, no, this is the first time we gave it to them. But by checking it before it came into the rack, I could say, hold on. They can say, oh, no, that's wrong. Give them another purple. Handed it to me, and it was all fixed. So I'm all for pointing it out very quickly before it gets into your rack, because once it does, it's very hard, even for cameras, to see if it's off by one chip.
Right. That's good advice for sure.
Yeah. And then the second part of his question, this I haven't had come up really before, Josh, but I can definitely see it happen in Boston. He said, if another player claims your checks, what do you do? So say you threw out $50 on the cum and another player's like, no, that was my cum. What would you do?
Well, usually you do that with me. You take my chips.
Yeah, but that's on purpose. And we work it out internally.
No, I think, you know, some usually if it happens, I've had it happen a few times where somebody will take, not very often, but, you know, what I think is just accidentally, you know, somebody's beside me and the dealer puts chips in kind of between us and, you know, somebody will take them. And
yeah, I've seen
I'll kind of just look at the dealer and keep my hand out or something like that and then depend on the dealer to fix it. You
okay.
Know, to say, hey, I paid you or, you know, and I'll say, no, you didn't, you know, there's nothing here kind of thing. And then ask the dealer or look for the dealer to fix it. I think that's most of the time what I've done if it happens.
Okay.
Sometimes, I mean, if you know the person next to you, you might say those are mine or something like that. But I can't think of, I haven't really had it happen in such a way that it is memorable.
I definitely haven't had it where it's been confrontational.
Right.
Like, no, these are mine. What are you talking about? Like, I'm going to fight you because you're trying to take my money. Again, I think Boston's the place that would happen. I mean,
maybe
there
Atlantic
or maybe
City.
Atlantic City,
yeah.
Maybe. But it's going to be in the Northeast. I mean, that's where this is happening.
Exactly.
But if it was me, I don't like having a confrontation with another player at the table. I would say something to the dealer, and if he didn't immediately correct it or help me fix the problem, I'd go straight to the box.
Yeah.
And then see what happens. If they blow me off, I'd probably color up and then walk around to the edge of the pit to the box or whoever might be there. Or the floor supervisor, and then get cameras involved to see, hey, this guy picked up my money, and see what they can do from there.
But more often sorry, Chris. I was just going to say, more often than not, the situation I find myself in is there's money out there, and it's usually not a significant amount. If it's a significant amount, people know, but you don't know whose it is. You know,
yeah,
there's a $5
chip
somewhere.
Yeah, there's a nickel there, a couple bucks, and
it's like, is that mine or yours?
It was changed from a VIG, and you don't know where it came from.
Right.
So I usually just give it a minute, and if we're about to roll, I pick it up.
Right. Well, no, or if you're talking to the person next to you, it's like, is that yours? And the person says, I don't know. And then you, you know.
You want to split it?
Or you give it to the dealers, right, or, you know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, so that's the situation I find comes up more often, is there's an extra chip somewhere that you don't know for sure whose it is.
No, that's true. I can easily see that happening. Okay, so good question, though, about that. Hopefully that answers your question a little bit. We got a question on Twitter, Josh, from Boondocks. He said, hey guys, table questions. He had two of them. One, when you start your day and buy in, what is your normal buy-in for a $15 and a $25 table?
So first of all, thanks Boondocks. Boondocks is a regular big slot player, I think, and we're starting to convert him over to craps, and I think he's enjoying it so far. So he's asking some good questions for newer players. And so, I think for a $25 table, my rule of thumb, as I've said many times before, is to try and have 10 times your average bet on a roll. You know, whatever your average bet on a roll is, to try and have that in your session bankroll. Usually, if I'm at a $25 table or a $50 table, well, let's say $25 table, I'd like to have $2,000 or $3,000 at least in a bankroll. I think at a $15 table, I would like to have at least $1,000. You can certainly go a lot less than that. But if you're playing the way we play, and really if you're playing 270 across, you know, 3,000 is even a low bankroll. But Chris and I usually have, you know, we're playing on credit or we have other money available or things like that that we can tap into. But I would say at a 15, you know, at least 1,000, probably 1,500. At a 25, you know, I'd be comfortable at 2 to 3.
Yeah,
I
tend to agree with that. If I'm not playing with you, Josh, for just for simplicity, so I have to take less markers, on a $50 table, I usually take $5,000 as a starting point. That's kind of where I go. So I guess to extrapolate out a $25 table, I take $2,500. And a $15 table, I take $1,500.
Yeah.
But, you know, honestly, it doesn't matter, though. It's really just on how the way that you play.
Right.
I mean, are you going to play across and hit every number and take full odds? You're going to need to be heavier on the bankroll side. Are you just playing, you know, maybe one combat with single odds? You know, if that's the case, then, you know, you can easily get by for $700-$800 on a $15 table and play for a long time.
Yeah.
So don't focus too terribly much on what the table minimum is. It's just more about how much you're putting in play. And Josh, we've seen people at $50 tables that only have 100 in play.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens all the time. So, I mean, if you can have $100 in play at a $50 table and $100 in play at a $15 table, it doesn't matter what the table minimum is. It's just how much is that in relationship to your overall bankroll. So right. Yeah, don't let that fool you too much.
Yeah. And I guess to kind of caveat to that is a little bit of what bets are you playing with that money? You know, if you're spending money on, you know, if you're just putting it on the features that are less likely to hit, that's going to go faster than if you're playing the 6-8.
Yeah, I can fully imagine.
And then that kind of ties into what we talked about the last episode, where I had a $500 bankroll. I tried to play closer to our normal levels, and that was a terrible idea. I didn't have a plan going in of how to play with a $500 bankroll. So you know, think about that. Is, you know, whatever your bankroll is, how, you know, can you sustain whatever length of time you want to stay at the table? Or are you going to just go balls to the wall to try and hit, you know, take your $500 to $24,000?
Exactly. Triple Lux Deluxe Max. Awesome system. And if I remember correctly, Josh, your last trip when you were talking about that, I usually tune you out when you're talking. But I think you said on that trip to your local casino, it was a $10 table, right?
It was.
So there you go. Josh played a $10 table with a $500 bankroll, which normally I would say is perfectly fine. Right. But not if you play that way.
But I did it dumbly.
Yeah, there you go. You know what, Josh? You could have made that big money, though, and then you would have had an amazing story to tell.
That would have been a great story. Tune in next episode where we will tell stories about the excitement we had on this trip.
This isn't part of his question, and we'll get back to part two in a minute, Josh, but it popped in my head as we were talking. What is the least amount of money that you've turned into the most amount of money? So you got down to, you know, a green chip in your rack, and you turned it into $10,000 or something crazy. Have you ever had a situation like that?
Yeah, I've had a situation at Wynn. This is before you and I started playing together, where I don't remember the exact, but it was, you know, let's say I was down to, you know, it was pretty close to just one or two rolls left of our normal buy-in. So, you know, let's say $500.
Okay.
And turned that in, I want to say, to $7,000 or $8,000, something like that. I think that's the biggest, you know, from as low as I got to, I think that's, I mean, you and I have had better sessions, but I don't remember us being down that much.
That low? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
Do you have a number that came to your head?
And you know, before I even answer that, Josh, the days before I was involved, we call those the BC days, the before Chris days. I mean, that's right. they're very biblical. So we like to talk about those as well. You know, there's been times, you know, plenty of times where I've been down. You know, actually where this happens the most is at my local Caesars property. I don't have credit there, so I'm always playing on cash.
Sure.
And I can specifically very well in my mind remember one day I came to the casino. I thought I'd grab more cash than I grabbed. I had like, you know, so I had like $2,000 and I thought I had like four or five.
Right, right.
So I had, I don't know how I did
that. Playing like you had four or five.
Well, so yeah, I gave them, I usually at that place usually buy in for $2,000 or $2,500 with the knowing that I can come back in for more if I need to. And on one time we were getting absolutely massacred. I was down to like, I'd say $150.
Right.
I skipped the pass. I wasn't shooting. I skipped the pass line. I put 10, 10, 10 on the feature and just bought the 6 and 8 with the rest of the money that I had. And by the time that shooter got done, I had about $9,000. Just from
that's
him,
amazing.
He hammered the 6-8. He made them all. Just everything you could possibly want to happen. Of course, by the third or fourth point, now I do have a line bet with odds and everything. So it's
sure,
building.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I've had plenty of opportunities to take, you know, a very small amount to a large amount. But I think you see that too much on Twitter or Reddit or any of those places where people are like, oh, you know, I turned $400 into $50,000. I mean, with the right roll, sure, that does happen.
And power pressing.
It's against the rules. No more power pressing. But no, I think, you know, in the long run, yeah, it doesn't happen too terribly often. And for every time it does happen, you just go bankrupt, you know, for that session, you're done. But it is interesting to see
more often. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you see it more at poker tables, you know, chipping a chair, but it can happen at a craps table as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, we've all had stories where we were down pretty low in our rack and all of a sudden things turned and
Yeah, exactly. And at the craps table.
Those are fun. Those are a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. Question two from Boondock. Docs, plural, sorry. When you color up, at what point would you go to the cage versus keeping your chips for your next session? You and I are complete opposites on this, actually.
We are. This is a preference thing, I think. Yeah, yeah, this is a preference thing. I am the one that always goes to the cage. I almost always... Unless it's $100 and, you know, unless it's a smaller amount of chips that I just feel like it's not worth going to the cage at the moment. But if it's anything substantial, I almost always go straight from the table to the cage.
Yep. And you take a new marker every time we come back to the table.
Exactly. Right. And I think that stems from somewhere along the way, really early on in my playing and caring about ratings days. I heard you get rated better if you buy in. You don't get rated as well if you buy in with chips, which is not correct. Doesn't matter if you buy in with cash or chips. But I think somewhere along in my head, I thought I'll get rated better if I buy in for cash. So I think that's where that comes from. But I almost always go to the cage. Chris, on the other hand, almost always keeps his chips.
I do. Yeah. If I have chips at the end of a session, it would be extremely rare for me to go to the cage and exchange those for cash. Now, I look at it. We've talked about this before on the show, Josh. I look at it from a different perspective. I don't want multiple cash transactions hitting the cage because I don't want a CTR foul at the end and get those things building up. Because the way that we play, we would easily exchange more than $10,000 in cash in a day, every day that we play. So no, I don't want to give you know everybody this laundry list of 1,000 CTRs, you know, just to give them a little extra reason to potentially choose me for a random audit. So I'd rather keep my name off of those things if I can. But you know, other than that, I will say, Josh, I think you're onto something, especially at properties you don't have as much history at, or if you're trying to make sure that you get a box person's, like, you know, full glance at the very beginning to make sure they're getting rated properly. They look a lot closer when you put $5,000 in cash out than if you just have a $5,000 chip you're trading in. Because then they assume, yeah, he's a pretty big player. I'll keep an eye on him. When the cash comes in, until they look you up in the system, they don't know what you are. But they know this is somebody I need to look at. So, yeah, I think it gets you a little bit more of a look.
Yeah. Who knows, really? I was going to say, though, I think I've started to become a little closer to you. And, you know, I'm more likely these days to carry a few chips around and that kind of thing. I'm still buying in for either cash or credit normally, but I'm less likely to go right away and cash out the chips. At least I find when I'm with you, it seems like.
And I will say that the other reason that I do it is because it is safer. I'd rather have a chip that's relatively small, that's, you know, inconspicuous in my pocket, that nobody would even know. I could be carrying 40,000 in chips. You would never know it. But if I had 40,000 in cash, I'd stand out, you know, pretty crazy from bulging pockets of bills. So I would try to avoid carrying large sums of cash around a casino. It makes you a target for certain crimes, obviously. The only time I really look to trade in chips for cash is if I know we're going to go play at a different casino that afternoon or night, and I didn't bring cash with me. So if we're going to Mirage on this Friday, Josh, and I don't have credit at Mirage, and I don't want to, you know, then maybe I would, you know, if I have 3,000 left from a session at Wynn, I'd cash it out and just take it with me over there. But that would be honestly the only time I would do it until the very end of the trip. And even worse than that, Josh, you know, if I have a good amount of winnings and I'm coming back to Vegas in a week or two, sometimes I'll just put the cash on deposit so I don't even have to think about it.
Now, on the other hand, I mean, if I have $40,000 on me, I'm running around the casino saying, woo!
Yeah, you got people bringing sparkler drinks and all that stuff. Bottle service everywhere.
Jeez. I'm not keeping it in my pocket. I'm waving it around.
You wouldn't know that Josh is the older of the two of us by the way that he acts. It's amazing. Okay, so thank you, Boondocks, for your questions. Hopefully that answered yours.
And hopefully you're having fun at the craps table.
Yeah, absolutely. Josh, we got an email from John. John said, I think it's John. That's what I have, but that doesn't sound right. Either way, he said, Josh, you got to clear up something I've been wondering listening to the podcast for a while. And we actually talked about this a little earlier. I hear you and Chris talking about 270 across all the time. Are you on the line with full odds and placing the point as well? Or just covering all the numbers except the point while on the line, or not playing the line at all? Thanks.
So 270 across, pretty simple. It's either 270 or 260, and it's all the numbers except the point. So we're not placing the point. You certainly can do that, and that's a kind of a somewhat related different strategy. But yeah, so we're all the numbers, either 50 or 60, and then we are usually on the line with full odds or less than full odds if you're me. That's kind of our usual way to play.
Baby odds on the 6-8.
Right.
Yeah. Josh, that's how we play. And we're pretty consistent about that unless we're really getting hammered. And then we're changing it up a little bit. But not much, honestly. We got a Twitter DM from Austin that's out at Shoutmaster128. It's more just feedback, Josh, in general. He said, hey, guys, just became a Patreon subscriber and love your content there. So thank you. The good, bad energy post made me think of a shooter on my table at New York, New York a couple months ago. He wasn't being negative, but he was the slowest shooter I've ever played with. Easily only one roll per minute with four of us on the table. After 3 to 4 rolls, one of the other guys at the table became visibly frustrated and started making little quips about hurrying it up, usually a sign for me to leave with the bad juju. The problem was this slow-ass shooter went on a heater. What should have been a good 25 to 30 minute roll turned out to take over an hour. I ended up tripling my bankroll, and the angry guy stopped being so angry after the shooter's 6th 5 in a row. Makes at that sense. Point, he just sighed and resigned himself to fate. Most annoying great roll ever. God, John, you know me. There is nothing I hate more than a slow table. It drives me insane.
Me too. And on a good roll, I mean, yes, you soak it in, but at the same time, you're like, can we please just get on with it?
Oh,
I know. You're on a good roll. It's hot. You want to keep it going. You want to keep the energy going. Chris, I can't remember if I've told this story to you or on the show, but I missed by a day. And this is, you know, dealers told me about it. So, you know, could be wrong as much as dealers, you know, exaggerate things. Rick, I don't know if you've ever exaggerated a story, but so the Bellagio dealers were telling me about, and this is a relatively well-known celebrity that plays regularly at Bellagio. So if you know, you know. And he was playing and his girlfriend was shooting. And they went on, this is what I understand, to be a 4-hour roll. But they were arguing the whole time. And so what would have been a record-breaking length of time roll, the dealer said they went back and looked at tape and all that stuff, a number of rolls, and I don't remember all the specifics, but it equated out to what would be normally like an hour and 20-minute roll that took 4 hours.
So you tell that story, Josh. I had no idea who you were talking about at the beginning. And then you said they were arguing the whole time, which makes me ask a follow-up question that doesn't incriminate anyone in particular. But is his girlfriend known for being an absolutely horrible tipper and very stingy?
I don't know. Because I don't know.
Maybe we're talking about different people here. Because that couple is well known in the Vegas market for her being extremely stingy. Him being generous and then her taking back the tips that he gives.
Oh, I don't know about this. This is somebody who may or may not have been part of a family that used to own a basketball team.
Interesting. Okay, well, we'll just leave it at that.
Too much gossip, yeah. But anyway, the idea is that was one of those roles that you're saying was one of those just amazing, amazing, amazing roles that, you know, yes, it ended up, I mean, it was still amazing. It was an hour plus roll, but it just took 4 hours to get there. And I think...
Yeah, and see, I don't like lines. I have very little patience in life. And that we've talked about this. This is why Josh and I typically play at an empty table.
Yes.
Because... win or lose, we want to get, you know, as many rolls in per hour as we can. We keep the table moving. We don't slow it down. We've played with plenty of people, Josh, before. And this is probably one of the reasons I hate dice setters so much. It's not because they believe it and they're wrong. Yeah. It's because it's just too damn slow. Because they have to sit the dice down, go through their stupid ritual, set things up, and then eventually toss the dice. And you get like one roll a minute. Exactly what that guy was saying. Whereas... you can have the exact same good roll in 10 minutes as you can in 50 minutes. It's just how slow you want to go. Let's get it in 10. And so we can keep the pace and play. And I think a lot of that stems from my history as a blackjack player, where for me, as a counter especially, hands per hour was the most important thing to me.
Sure.
That overcame everything. The more hands I could get in, the better. So I wanted to play by myself. I wanted an extremely fast dealer who was efficient. I didn't need a person that wanted to talk to me with a story between every single hand. I just needed to keep those cards moving. And from that perspective, I want to keep the dice moving. It actually frustrates me when I see a stick that isn't very good, that can't keep the pace of the table going. You know, they sit on them for too long.
That's the thing, right?
Bets are set. Everybody's good. The base dealers are ready, and the stick is still struggling to push the dice. No, as soon as that last payout is done and any random chips in the field are picked up and taken care of, those dice need to be sent immediately.
Now that you mention it, that's actually something that sometimes gets under my skin even more than a player that's taken a long time, is if you have a greener crew, you know, and it's taken a while, that can some, especially if I'm losing, you know, if you're losing, everything makes you cranky and stuff.
Oh, but yes, of course.
It can, you know, an inexperienced crew that's taken a long time, especially the stick, you know, the stick man can just drive you crazy for sure. And that's one of those things, you know, if you're not having fun for whatever reason, step away, go to a different table, whatever, you know, if the juju is not right for you, then step away. But that, I'm sure on a good roll, there's nothing you can do. You just got to sit back and...
No, yeah, you're staying there until the very end, no matter what happens. And Josh, I'm sure there's a lot of people that prefer a slower table. They can analyze their bets more and, you know, make sure everything's set up properly and ask the dealer questions and stuff. I'm sure some people love that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we all know everybody, it's a, you know, it's a negative EV game. So by getting more rolls per hour,
we're hurting ourselves. We know this.
It's not,
we're well
I'm not
aware.
Saying this is a right. This is a good, I mean, a packed table that's taken 5 minutes between every roll is by far a better way to play from a you know, the longest standpoint.
Your money almost always lasts longer at a full table than it does at a heads up table for matter what.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, the roll count per hour is really what's dictating what's going to happen to you long term. So, you'd always prefer a slow table if that's what's most important to you. But since I do it for entertainment purposes only, you know, I want to get as much entertainment as I can.
We sure as hell aren't doing it for profit. That's for sure.
Hell no. Well, maybe, Josh, maybe until next episode when we get another great crap strategy to discuss that actually works.
I'll look for that.
Okay, you keep looking for that one. Let me know what you
anybody, find. That's your call out, listeners. If you have the winning crap strategy, shoot it my way so we can talk about it. Not Chris, just me, so I can spring it on him.
Perfect. Okay, Josh. We got a DM from Jeffrey on Twitter. He said, Chris, question from the last pod. When placing the bets for the dealers, what is the actual etiquette for doing it? Maybe we didn't talk in detail, Josh, about how these bets should be made, but... what's the etiquette for making a bet for a dealer?
So if I'm going to, well, let's start kind of at the beginning. Obviously, you can make a bet for a dealer by just putting money on the line next to your line bet. You don't have to say anything. You're just going to put it on the line. Once a point's established, you can also put, let's say it's a nickel. So they're going to bet a nickel for the dealers. You can put that on the pass line, straddle that line. So you're putting it between the pass line bet and its odds right on the line. And that's another way the dealers will know that's for them, except under rare circumstances that I do kind of crazy things sometimes. But if you're going to do a, what is it, a put bet at the same time, that gets more complicated. But so you can straddle the pass line with odds, with a place bet. Or the thing that Chris and I do quite often is I'll just say verbally $6 rate for the dealers, and I'll put $6 out in the come area, in the come box. And you don't even have to say it. Most of the time dealers will know, but $6 rate for the guys or dealers or the crew or, you know, that kind of thing. I'm verbally saying what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think that's the key things. And I'll just reiterate, when we're talking bets for dealers, you know, people talk about, you know, what bet to make, what's the best bet for dealers, what's the worst bet. You know, of course, a pass line bet is the safest and best chance of them actually winning. But after playing way too much craps over time, and Josh, I'm sure you're the same way, you see it as well. If we're only talking about like singles, or even if it's just nickels, dealers for the most part would rather see that on bets that are going to pay, you know, a relatively high payout, a big ROI for that bet. So, yeah, gotta love that term coming back.
That's right.
So, I mean, if it's a nickel, or especially if it's a dollar, I think most dealers would rather see it on a hard way, maybe a feature bet for the dealers, something that's going to pay more than, you know, 1-to-1 or, you know, 6-to-5 or something like that. Because it's just at the end of the day, especially at these bigger properties like, you know, Wynn or Bellagio or Aria or almost any Vegas Strip property, a dollar bet that pays even money will have such a negligible effect on how much their take-home income is. They appreciate it, but I don't think it makes a big enough dent for them really to care if you make the bet or not.
I wonder,
out of line here?
Well, I don't know if you're out of line, but I am curious. And I know we have a few dealers that listen. I'd be curious to hear. I think it probably varies from perspective to perspective. The more, you know, risk, not risk averse. What's the opposite of risk averse? The more daring somebody's personality, the more like somebody is closer to us as far as gamblers, the more likely are there, I think, to want to go your way of thinking. But if somebody is very risk averse, they just want you to give them the $5, put it in the box.
Yeah. You know? But like I'm thinking, you know, you think about how many employees that tip is going to be split with.
Oh, sure.
It depends
on
how many hours they work that day. I mean, even Josh, what we tip, you know, at a place like Wynn, it's very, very trivial at the end of the day.
Right.
Because for no matter how, if we even tip, you know, say for a session, you and I tip, I don't know, $750, $1,000, because it's a really good session. We're throwing out money left and right. For every people, you know, every group like us, there's somebody in high limit, you know, that's tipping
that per hand, or
you know, right. Yeah, I mean, tipping 10,000, 20,000. Right. And that's really what's the real driver of tips. I've just found in my experience, dealers, you know, dollar tips are great. I mean, I'm always going to be the first one to say tip your dealers no matter what it is. That's right. Not what I'm going at here. I'm just saying, I think dealers really do have a tendency to appreciate it more if it's on things like a hard way bet.
Sure.
If you're going to throw a dollar, give them a chance to win 10 bucks if it hits, rather than $2 on a pass line.
Well, a lot of times, Chris, I don't know if you do it, I'll ask. I'll say, you know, I've got $5, where do you want to put it? You know, and I'll let the dealer say, you know, in the box it, or on the five.
90% of the time, it ends up, on a prop action sort of
right, crazy exactly. thing. We're on a hard eight, right. But I mean, I like giving the dealers a little bit of choice. You know, sometimes I'll just say, sure. You know, $6, six or eight, you pick. I mean, I won't give them, you know, but it's fun to let them, you know, even have a say in where the bet goes.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I'd say, look, if you're only going to tip, and it's different for everybody, I understand that. If you're only going to tip $10, $15 for a session, if that's what you normally tip, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm glad you're tipping, period. Any dollar right. is better than no dollar. But if you're going to do that, I'd almost rather see it end up like on the all for the dealers, you know, just a dollar on the all for them. So that if it does hit, they're going to get, you know, $150, you know, big pop from it. And boy, I'll tell you what, when they go to pay the alls and they see a dollar for the dealers and they get 150, they are extremely happy. And Josh does this. He usually plays.
I always do. Yeah.
1-2-1 or 2-1-2. What do you play for the dealers?
Yeah. 2-1-2 usually.
Yeah. I knew you played something like that for them. So I think they really appreciate that. Cause yeah, even if you get a small, you know, they're getting $60. They're getting a big pop for that. And so it gives them some entertaining, you know, entertainment if something good happens. And I try to mix it up so that I have a good balance between relatively low risk, low payout dealer bets,
right.
where I'll constantly put $5 on the point or something like that. Or if it's a good roll, we'll put $5 on each number as a place and a buy bet, you know, to get them a chance every time a good roll comes that they're making some money. But at the same time, you know me, Josh, I'll throw in a hard way every third, fourth roll.
Oh, yeah.
If it's an even number point, you know, I only play them if they're the even number points, you know, 4, 6, 8, and 10.
Only the hard ways at them if they're even.
Yeah, that's
points.
The only time I'll play them because I don't want to chase. So right. if I put it on the point, I don't have to worry about chasing if an easy number comes.
Sure.
But
nines are hard.
Yeah, and they're the hardest number to throw.
Right.
So I definitely wouldn't do that. but anytime I play a hard way, I always piggyback the dealers for a nickel. So no matter how much I'm betting, I always put them on a nickel, always. And then I think they love that because especially if it's piggyback, then they can pocket what they want to, or they can press it, you know, parlay, right. whatever they want to do. It gives them a lot of freedom. And the best experience I've ever had on dealer bets was a hard way that I took from 25 to 100 to 2 to 300. And the dealers went from a nickel to a quarter to 100 to 300. So
fantastic.
I mean,
and they're
and
delighted,
when you're starting
I'm
to get
sure,
those
yeah.
kind of bets for the dealers, I mean, they're getting, you know, potentially massive payouts where,
right.
yeah, a $2,700 hit on a hard way. That's terrific. And in a small property like I play, I mean, that could double their tipping.
It's a big deal.
For the day.
It's a big deal.
I mean, cause they might not get anywhere near that on an average day at a small property.
Right.
So I'm not saying there's a right or wrong way to do this. I'm just saying, as you go to make your dealer tips, try to keep in mind, you know, what you think might get the most bang for the buck for happiness for them and for you. And like Josh said, feel free to ask where they'd rather see it, because then they would avoid the frustration of, oh, we want another dollar when they would have been really excited. Maybe if that same dollar was on a hard eight or something.
Right. Exactly. It's fun. I mean, tipping the dealers, you know, we're big supporters of that. And it's fun to have them. We love to do it because it's fun to have them in the game, whatever number you're doing it. And to sure. kind of go back to your question, just articulate whatever it is that being for the dealers or for the crew.
And if you're a dealer listening to this right now, shoot us an email. And no, Rick, I'm not, you know, singling out you. You don't have to be the one. We have other ones. But if you're listening to this, send us an email, send us a Twitter DM. Let us know what you'd rather see from players. You know, based on the kind of property you're at and what you see, does a dollar tip matter to you at the property that you're at? Is it enough to really, you know, sway your attention one way or the other?
While we're talking, by the way, I just see I got an email from MGM offering me complimentary tickets to WWE SmackDown.
Oh, God. I used to be a huge WWF fan. I really was. And you know, I say that.
And it all just went to hell?
last night when I was going to bed, I watched the Royal Rumble from 1998. So I can't say I'm not a wrestling fan, even though I'm really not a wrestling fan. Well, that attitude era, right thing. From the 96 to, you know, 2002 ish or whatever it was, huge fan. The new modern WWE's pure crap. So
don't alienate our listeners.
This is not going to be on the show, is it?
I don't know. It's up to you. You can take it out. Listen, I don't care.
If this is on the podcast, guys, we decided it was a good idea to leave it in. If it's not, then so be it.
Then it's just Chris and I get giggling at each other.
Yeah, this is just what happens after an hour of recording. Josh, I think that's it for the main questions I was hoping to answer. We have a couple more, but they're all relatively long. They'd probably be better saved for another episode in the future, if that's good with you.
It works for me. We got to get back to the tables.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're knee deep in it right now. Okay. So Patreon update, patreon.com/crapvegas. Before I even say anything more, I cannot thank all of you enough. We have been overwhelmed by the number of people signing up for it, the feedback that we've got. It's been really absolutely terrific. It's well beyond anything we ever imagined. And it really does make us feel like we're, you know, valued for what we put out, even though we know it's just two idiots talking about a game that a few people play. I'm glad you all enjoy listening to it. This week we did put out another episode of CVTV. And we reviewed the Scarecrow and Mrs. Josh.
Mrs. Yep.
Okay. Scarecrow.
It's just Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Okay. Perfect. We reviewed.
Start over.
Okay. Whole episode. Welcome to Crap Vegas. No. We did review the episode of that show that led to our opening little clip that we play every time we have a podcast. I will say that the beginning 15, 20 minutes of that show were boring as shit. And the end of it was absolutely terrific. So if you can make it to the end of that 43-minute video that we put out, you will have a good time. And if you can't, I apologize.
And Chris and I both went back and rewatched it after it came up live on Patreon, and we both had a great time. So hopefully, patrons, thank you for subscribing. And as Chris said, we value you a lot, and hopefully you're enjoying what the extra content we're putting out.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to single out those new signups that we had in the past since the last episode, Josh, a thank you to Logan, Michael Y, Austin L, Christian B, and John M. And also a special thank you to Troller Boy. Josh, did we forget to mention him last week? I think we did.
And I think, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Troller Boy made a donation to Tim from The Better Life, who then sent it on to us, something like that. I don't know. You were involved in that whole thing.
Yeah, see, and I don't pay enough attention, and I should. So I'm sorry, Troller Boy. I think he won some sort of bet contest thing that Tim was sponsoring, and okay. He chose to distribute part of his earnings from that that competition, Josh, to multiple different podcasts, and we just happened to be one of them. But still extremely generous. Thank you, Troller Boy. We really do appreciate it.
TB.
TB was one of the first people on our message boards that I still forget exists 99% of the time. I forget to go on there, approve people for membership. Josh, I meant to tell you before this episode recorded that we had some questions and feedback on there that
we need to get to.
Responded to that. It's going to be just as old as our emails pretty soon if we're not careful. I'm not saying it's a blossoming community, but thank you for everybody that sends your messages that way. Hopefully one day that's what it will become. So we do appreciate it. And I'm still doing my best to keep the Ukrainians away from posting a bunch of gibberish every day.
Don't slam the Ukrainians.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is, Josh. It usually has a Ukrainian flag on one of the photos that I'm removing. And I have to do it like two or three times a week. I thought I'd got them all and they keep coming back for more. It's like herpes over here. Okay. upcoming
put that
trips.
Put that on your Crap Vegas bingo card.
I say, was that on Herpes the bingo card for things? upcoming trips. As Josh and I said, right now, as you're listening to this, we are in Vegas. I may be on my way home, depending on when you do listen to it. We're in Vegas this weekend. Josh is sticking around for a couple extra days after I leave. So if you catch this on Sunday or Monday, Josh, how long are you in town for?
I will be at Park Nomad until Tuesday. So if you listen to this before Sunday afternoon, you'll still probably find us at Wynn. But if you listen after Sunday afternoon and before Tuesday the 7th, I think it is, then I will most likely be at Park.
Okay, that makes sense. I am, Josh, we were talking about it before we started recording. I'm just so thrilled to get back out there and actually have another fun weekend with you. It's been, we looked at it like 6 or 8 weeks since we've been out there.
Chris and I, it's been a while.
And kind of feeding into what I was about to say in a second, I'm having a hard time in my calendar finding dates to get out to Vegas in the near future. So this may be, you know, the sole trip over like a 3 or 4 month period, which for me is actually quite strange. Usually I get out there a lot more than you do.
I'm thinking that hearing that out of your mouth is like me saying on a Thanksgiving trip, I wasn't going to gamble. I'm going to,
well,
I'm going to lay odds, listeners, that Chris will be out to Vegas sometime between now and April.
I'm hoping there's only, there's really only one or two weekends that are potentials at this point. Sometime in late March is my goal to get back out there. And here's where I need help from people. I'm trying to figure out if I can get out there in late March, since Josh won't be joining me more than likely, where I should actually stay. Should it be an MGM weekend, Josh, that I wanted to have this trip? Should it be a second trip to Wynn to get that status, you know, continue building it for the year? Should I go back to Borgata or Atlantic City, you know, up there and have some fun up there? I'm really upset that... What is it? The Motor Manor. What is it?
The Circus Manor Motor Lodge, right?
Yeah, that thing. Yeah, it looks very nice in the picture. It's very classy. I will say I am very disappointed. I already told him off air in a tweet or something or a DM, but I won't be able to make the Biloxi trip that Mississippi Rob for his group. I wish I could. I have prior engagements with my family that weekend, so there's no way I'm going to get down there. But I am hoping, Josh, we can find time to go down to Biloxi and maybe meet up with Rob or some other people that are living, you know, down in the Southeast that want to join us.
Same thing for me. I would love to do it. That weekend's not going to do it. It's a harder trek for me to get down there, and, you know, it takes a lot of planning. But I want to do it sometime soon, too.
Yeah, for sure. Other than that, a quick reminder for everyone, please subscribe, like, and review our podcast on your favorite podcasting app. Or you can visit our merch store, crapvegas.com/shop. I always love seeing those t-shirts and dice fly off the shelves, and then I forget to ship them for a week or a week and a half. And then sometimes I ship them the same day. It really just depends on how busy it is when you catch
there you me. Go.
So, yeah, hopefully people have patience with those orders. I do my best to fulfill them as quickly as I can. Josh, did you have anything else that you want to discuss before we get out of here today?
I do not have a dad joke for you, so you can rest easy. I just want to say thank you to our friend and supporter, TwoWayHeart8 on Twitter, for pointing out that my local casino that I mentioned, I think, on the last show, does have a Heidi machine.
Oh, found it, or he found it.
Well, he found it, yeah, and sent me a picture of it, told me where it was at the property. So I'm like, that's information I probably didn't need to know. It's probably bad that I know that.
Now, what kind of Heidi machine was it, Josh? Was it
the
Heidi and Hannah?
The ones at Wynn. Oh, just the old school ones that Wynn has.
Well, that's actually probably good for you, because if it was a Heidi and Hannah, I'd be up there like every day.
Hannah.
But, Hannah. Yes. but if it's a traditional Heidi machine, I wouldn't rush up there as quickly.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if I'm guessing, though. Next time I go up there, I'm sure I'm going to play it.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe you missed it. You said you did like a whole trip around.
I did
a lot,
but, you know, those things can hide and, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Maybe it wasn't even on the floor when you came, Josh. They knew that they saw your face in there, your reputation.
No, they would put three out there.
Shit, we have got to get a Heidi's machine in here if we want Josh
coming
back.
Oh, I said, yes, that's exactly right. The only other thing I was going to say is thanks again to the patrons. That your support means a lot. And I think, Chris, did you tell me that Joyce signed up for a year?
Oh, yeah. Joyce is one of our people that have converted from a monthly plan to an annual plan. So, again, more pressure on you and I to actually keep pumping out content. So, thanks.
It's
just more pressure.
So, thank you. Thanks, everybody. And thanks all of everybody that's listening and enjoying the show.
Yeah, we really do appreciate it. And just a last second thank you. I know I'd posted on Twitter recently about some family problems that had popped up. I got a lot of really nice messages from a lot of people, some that I hadn't even talked to before, some that are big listeners of the show. I mean, everything that you said was extremely nice. My dad did pass away in the past week, so it was kind of a rough time for us. And I just want to say I do apologize in advance for us being kind of slow, at least me being kind of slow on response to DMs and emails and orders and stuff like that. We were dealing with that as a family, and it did have to take priority on what's going on. But hopefully now we can kind of get back to normal and get back into the flow of things. And I can be slightly more responsive on the messages or question that you send.
Just slightly.
Doesn't, no promises, like no grand changes, the normal response. Yeah, just get back to the normal slow, not like, you know, like IRS normal slow processing of tax returns, right. Not the extreme slow that we had there for a while. So
no, Chris, yeah, you already know I've talked to you offline, and you know, you have my condolences and sympathies, and I know everybody understands it. And I'm glad you get to take your mind off it away for our trip a little bit.
Yep, that's why I'm very excited about this weekend to kind of forget about things for a couple days. It'll be a lot of fun. And Josh, maybe this will be the first trip, you know, maybe, you know, my father will be smiling down upon us and be the first time we make a decent chunk of change in Vegas, because based on our recent track record, it has not been very good.
We better.
Well, we can blame him if not. So.
Thanks, everybody.
But yeah, thank you all for listening. We will talk soon. We really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Crap Vegas Podcast.
Have you ever been to Vegas?
Check out all our recent news and our Vegas trip calendar by visiting crapvegas.com.
See you in Vegas.
Is our Vegas trip calendar still on crapvegas.com?
Oh, yes. Probably not updated anytime soon. Thank God that wasn't a bad joke, though.